The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. Steve Nichols, Sebastian Salazar in studio. Steve, a lot to look forward to on the weekend. Craig Berley, Jan Agafjorthoff going to join us in just a little bit as we close in on the intensifying race for the top four in England. But we got to start in Spain. El Clásico on the weekend. Real Madrid hosting Barcelona on Saturday. Here's what it means to the table. Atleti right now clinging to a one-point lead over Barcelona and a three-point lead over Real Madrid with 9 games left in the season. Julian Laurent, Sid Lowe with us for more. Sid, if we're going off recent form, who's the favorite between these two sides coming into this match?
It's a very good question. I suppose, let me give you a sort of a slightly sideways answer in this. The favourite is not Atletico Madrid, because, of course, we had them with a 10-point lead not so very long ago. They've frittered that away. They've only won 4 of the last 10. And what makes this Clásico, in a way, interesting is that Real Madrid and Barcelona, neither of them top, but it does feel like this is the game from which the winner would likely win the league. Now, obviously, there's no guarantees, but would likely win the league. And that is because of this collapse that Atletico Madrid have kind of gone through, but also the fact that these two teams have really accelerated. So to answer your question directly, we're talking about a Real Madrid team that I think has lost only 1 in 19 and a Barcelona team that hasn't lost in 19 in La Liga. They've picked up huge numbers of points, not always convincing until recent weeks. Barcelona, I think, playing much the better football in terms of an offensive approach, in terms of the number of goals that they're scoring, perhaps the quality of the play, but there's a reliability about Real Madrid. So it's very, very difficult to put your finger on who the favourite is. It does feel like a game where genuinely anything can happen.
Didn't hear an answer in there, at least not a direct one. Jules, no. Who do you think is the favourite?
I don't think there's one, really, Sebi. I think City's right. I don't think there's one. You can't say, oh, Barca favourite or Real Madrid are favourite. Maybe the host, of course, and we saw that Jurgen Klopp didn't really like to play at Valdebebas, so maybe that gives you a slight advantage. I'm not sure, but other than that, both teams in great form, even if the dynamics are quite different, because on one hand, Barcelona seems to have found the tactical shape, certainly the formation that enables them to get the best out of all the players, and collectively they certainly look very strong. For Real Madrid, it's still very much dependent on the form of Karim Benzema, the three midfielders who have been outstanding, and Thibaut Courtois in goal. I guess maybe Mendy at times has been very important for them this season, but it's still more those individual, more than the collective strength that we've seen in Barcelona for the last 19 games. So I'm not sure if the 3-4-3 from Barcelona is suited to play against this Real Madrid side, but certainly you could see the different momentum, even if they're both in great forms.
Sid, let's dive in on the potential lineup here for Barcelona and the difficult choices for Ronald Koeman. We asked you to piece together what the lineup might look like. You don't have Antoine Griezmann in as a starter, do you?
No, I think I don't. Obviously, there's a footballing reason for that. He's also just become a father for the third time. Bizarrely, by the way, all three of his children born on exactly the same day. Well, not exactly the same day, obviously different years, but the same date. He I think, probably won't start. I expect it to be Messi with Dembélé up front. I think there's another doubt as well, which is whether or not Piqué, who's in the squad, goes straight back into the side. I wouldn't expect Barcelona to do that. I think Koeman has found his formation, although the way they played against Valladolid on Monday perhaps introduced doubt into that formation for the first time in 4 or 5 weeks. And Koeman's been quite flexible in this in a way that really surprised us, because at the start of the season he seemed very, very, very wedded to that 4-2-3-1, to that idea of accumulating lots of people in roughly the number 10 position. It didn't really convince. It seemed to be a very split midfield and it didn't really work. Then he moved from that to 4-3-3. He then moved to 3 central defenders. And he actually seems to have been willing to change. And so I think we have a very clear idea now of probably 9 of his 11 starters in almost every game, and that one doubt for me now is whether Piqué goes in, having got fit again, and whether Griezmann plays, or whether it's an extra midfielder.
Jules, from the Griezmann perspective, if you're not starting a game like this, where does it leave you with the club and really specifically with the manager?
I think, not that he's been in great form, but I think it would be a tactical decision because, and I agree with Sid on that point, because you can't, if you play Messi, Dembele and Griezmann, that leaves you only with Pedri and Busquets against the three Real Madrid midfielders, Casemiro, Modric and Cruz. And I don't think you can afford to be 2v3 in that area of the field where the game is going to be won or lost, really. So you drop Griezmann, you bring in Frankie de Jong, maybe from the back three into midfield, or someone else in there, but at least you're 3v3 and you've got a more solid base there to actually compete with Real Madrid in midfield. If you have Griezmann up front with the other two, I think you're unbalanced against Real Madrid team, and I don't think that would work.
Sid, the absences for Real Madrid obviously piling up. No Varane, no Ramos, no Hazard, no Carvajal in this one. But the 11 that you've put forth here is basically the same thing we saw against Liverpool midweek with maybe one change, right? Is that Valverde?
Yeah, I think Valverde, for the energy that he brings, for the ability that he has to fill in, and maybe actually in truth, we've not seen the best of him partly when he's tried to fill in for other people, tried to fit into gaps that aren't his natural role. But I think he does give him the energy that perhaps other players don't have. I think there will be a need because of playing these three games in 8 days to freshen it up. But I think broadly speaking, Zidane knows what he wants. Also, if you look at it from the point of view of trying to choose your team, well, the back four is basically the only defenders available. And bear in mind that one of them, Lucas Vazquez, isn't really a defender anyway, although he's done a brilliant job at right back. The midfield, I think it's plausible that he rests one of those three. But those three together are currently, and have been for maybe 4 or 5 years, the best midfield in the world. And I think Zidane doesn't want to break that up unless he has to. So I think if we see one of them missing, then you're absolutely guaranteed that that player plays against Liverpool and that it's a decision based on a certain degree of freshness rather than necessarily on a tactical approach to this game in particular.
How tough do you think it's a decision for Zidane, Stevie? I mean, these are players that you have to rely on. They're over 30 and you got three huge games. Is it asking a bit much?
It's definitely asking too much to play those three straight games in a trot. And I think the fact that you're going to have to play two of them plays into Barcelona's hands. And it's 100%. This game, in my opinion, is about control in the middle of the park. Because if I'm Barcelona and I'm looking at that back four of Real Madrid, as good as Real Madrid can be going forward, it's going to be all about the middle of the park. You dominate the middle, you're going to get chances against a back four that is pretty average at best.
Sid, big picture, does this feel a little bit like the end of an era, perhaps the last Clásico with Sergio Ramos, Messi, even Zidane?
Yeah, of course it does. And you know, I think that one of the things that's changed, if you look at the last 3 months where Messi's been absolutely brilliant since the turn of the year, where Barcelona have been picking up a lot of points, is that's fueled an optimism. And of course, that optimism has then fed into the fact that Laporta is back as president. But it's in particular fueled an optimism that maybe Messi will change his mind, that maybe Messi stays this time. And I think there is a significant amount of optimism about that. But the fact remains that his contract is up. That risk is there and it's very real. And then the same situation is also true of Sergio Ramos. It's taken a bit longer for us to reach that point of realising that, wow, this really could be the end after 16 years. But Ramos's contract is up at the end of the season. There isn't an agreement yet with Real Madrid. The relationship between him and the president is a little bit tense. There's very much a stalemate and a standoff in terms of where they're at. And so these could be the two captains. And let's not forget this, the two captains of these two teams could be not there next year. And then you get Zidane, who, if you listen to Zidane, and I wonder what Jules thinks about this, listening to him and seeing it from a French perspective as well, every time he talks at the moment about his position at Real Madrid, he talks very much in the present tense. There's no sense of looking forward. There's no sense of anything other than seeing the season out in the best possible way. And I think this is a man who's very clear that he knows that his time will come. And I think he feels that it's sooner rather than later. Now, it's not to say it's any guarantee, but we could be looking at a manager and a two captains gone by next season. It's inevitable that we start to feel that this could be the end of an era.
Jules?
I think this is a fair question on Zidane's future. The way he flirted with Alessandro Del Piero and Juventus in midweek again, which is not the first time, saying, for now I'm here, but let's see, we don't know what the future holds, was very much like, it's quite unlikely that I'll be here next season. So if Juventus are looking for someone to replace Pirlo, then that could be me. It's inevitable that one day he will manage Juventus and the French national team. That's the two certainties we've got with Zidane. When? We don't know, but I can pretty sure tell you that it will happen one day. So I think it's been a tough season for him. Many times this season we've spoken how much under pressure he was every time he turned things around, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. Like that win against Liverpool, where I thought tactically he was brilliant. But it's been a tough season once again for him, and that's the reason why he quit the first time. And I think that could be a reason why easily he could decide to step down as well at the end of the season.
We started off the show asking who was the favorite in this match. Oddsmakers have Barcelona away installed as favorites on Saturday in Madrid. Of course, Real winning the reverse fixture 3-1 back in October. Forget what they have to say. What about our guys? What picks did they make? All right, so Sid's got Real Madrid winning 2-0. Jules for a 2-2 draw. I like the sound of that. Stevie and Ale going 2-1 Barcelona. Sid, I'll start with you. Real Madrid to keep a clean sheet without Ramos, without Varane? Interesting.
Well, look what happened in the Liverpool game. Now, I know they did concede in that game, so there's a small flaw in this argument. But what Real Madrid did, of course, was partly protect a very inexpert and very inexperienced back four by keeping the ball. And keeping the ball with that midfield that I think is very, very secure and very, very sure of itself. Now, as I say, I think there's a chance that for fitness reasons and in terms of freshness that one of them doesn't play. I think there's a chance that it's a midfield four instead of a three. So maybe Valverde plays one of them. Maybe you get someone even like Isco in there. And I think that he might try and protect that back four with the midfield. I also think if you look at Real Madrid and you look at the way that they won the league last season, in those final 11 games in particular, you look at the way that they've picked up the big results this year, they've tended to be relatively conservative. Not entirely conservative. We're still talking about Real Madrid. We're still talking about an attacking team. But I think Zidane's awareness that, okay, we may not have the players, we may not have the BBC anymore that outscores other teams, so we need to make sure we don't concede and know that at some point a goal will come. And in this run that we were talking about earlier, where Real Madrid, I think, have lost only one in 19, a lot of those victories are really not very good. Mm. They're not very exciting. They're not very creative. They're not very attacking. Just as if you look at that run of 11 games that won them the league last year, it's very hard to remember a game where you thought, wow, Real Madrid were brilliant, in an expansive sense. But there's a security about them now that we just didn't see 2 or 3 months ago. But it's a security that we see so often. How many times has Zidane been on the edge? How many times have we said, oh, this is a big week for them, they have to win? The bad news for Real Madrid is they can't afford to lose this game. But the good news is also that they can't afford to lose this game, because when they're in that position, they have this amazing ability to get that result that they need.
Jules, you've got this one going down 2-2. We've had so many big match duds across Europe this season. Why do you think it'll be different this time?
I think Messi will score, because that's what Messi does in the Clásicos. He scored as many goals on his own than the whole Real Madrid squad all put together in Clásicos. So, you know, it's inevitable. Karim Benzema is going to score, because that's what Karim does in big games. He scores as well. We've seen that this season. And I just think that with that makeshift defence for Real, I think they will get exposed. And I also think that they're going to score. And I want to see Vinicius against Sergino Dest or wherever he plays. And if he can pick it up when he left it against Liverpool and be finally consistent like we've been waiting him to be for a long time now. So that's why I thought a lot of goals and a draw could be a fair result.
If we look at the odds for who's actually going to win La Liga, you'll see Real Madrid there getting the third best odds. Sid, you've got Real Madrid beating Barcelona. So are you telling me Real Madrid's going to win the league then?
I really don't know. I mean, genuinely, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I started to see the slip from Atletico Madrid. I thought that Barcelona would win the league. I thought that Barcelona were the only one of the two teams behind Atletico Madrid that could get close enough to them. And suddenly we see Real Madrid in this position, which it's bizarre that they're in this position in a way. There have been so many weeks when it's, okay, that's it. They don't win this game, it's done. And then they find a way through. And then they find a way to survive. Look at the late equaliser against Atletico Madrid, the late equaliser against Real Sociedad, the comebacks, the amount of times that they've done this. And you just wonder if at some point that just kind of builds into a momentum. I think, and I hate to say this because it would be very nice if someone else won the league, but I think Atletico Madrid's title challenge is coming to an end. And I think it's between Real Madrid and Barcelona. And if Madrid win this, I think we'll all say they're favourites. And it's not to say they definitely win it, but I think we'll all say they're favourites if they win this game.
Great stuff, guys. For an even fuller version of an El Clásico preview, head over to our website. Sid and Graham Hunter teaming up on a comprehensive look ahead to Saturday's action. And of course, Barcelona perhaps closing in on a La Liga trophy. Could they make it 2? Barcelona facing Athletic Bilbao April 17th in the Copa del Rey final. Match you can watch on ESPN+.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd's-Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC.
Premier League table looks like this with a month and a half to go in the season. It's 8 games for most of the league. Little drama at the very top of the table, but totally different story when it comes to that top 4 chase, especially with the games coming up this weekend that could impact the race. On Saturday, you got Liverpool, 3 points out of the top 4, hosting Aston Villa, Crystal Palace hosting Chelsea, who are in 5th. They're 1 point behind 4th place West Ham, who are in action on Sunday against Leicester City, of course, in 3rd, a 4-point gap between those two sides. And then you got 6th place Spurs against Manchester United, who are in 2nd. That a rematch of the 6-1 at Old Trafford back in October. For more, we welcome into the show Jan Agafjordtoft and Craig Burley. Gentlemen, great to have you with us. Why don't we take a look at the odds for the top 4? No surprise then that Manchester United, huge favorites. Leicester City, prohibitive favorites as well. That's when things get interesting, though. You'll see here Chelsea and Liverpool, the exact same odds. Both better odds than West Ham, who are actually in the top 4. Stevie, I'll start with you here. Every time I come to you on Liverpool top 4 odds, your optimism is going down. But every time we look at the odds, Liverpool's chances seem to be going up. What do you make of the fact that right here they've got the same odds as Chelsea?
I make of it that it doesn't make any sense. Chelsea on an incredible run, you pretty much know what you're going to get every time they step on the field. And defensively, other than just one of those days against West Brom, it's not luck. That's organisation. That's coaching. It's working on the training field and then putting it into a game. And then we look at Liverpool. You talk about the complete opposite. You don't know what you're going to get defensively. They haven't been particularly great going forward. And you're not quite sure what you're going to get. So how, if you think of what I've just said, how are these two sides looked upon as equals? I don't understand it.
Craig, that's just it. These odds don't seem to take into account form, do they?
No, I can see the headline in the Liverpool Echo again tomorrow. Negative nickel on Liverpool. but there is no doubt Chelsea have the round pegs and holes at the moment in terms of, you know, the players playing in the correct position, the organisation that Tuchel has brought in, the system that he's brought in. And it's pretty much, apart from that West Brom game where they went down to 10 men, but really, you know, should still have been able to dominate that game. For some reason, they completely capitulated. Liverpool, they're just an unknown. It's not, at the end of the day, it matters not a jot what the bookies say, who's going to make it there. You've got to go and get the results. And I think, apart from the blip, Chelsea have shown there is more chance of them putting a consistent run together between now and the end of the season than there is Liverpool. But Liverpool are so hot and cold with their injuries, it's just hard to tell.
Jan, Chelsea, Spurs, Liverpool, I guess we could throw Everton in there as well. The teams outside the top 4, who are you most confident in to chase down those Champions League spots?
Well, it depends which of the 4 top or 2 of the tops, like West Ham and Leicester. I mean, it's no disrespect because Brendan Rodgers and David Moyes done a fantastic job at their clubs. So it all depends as well how far will they have the stamina to stay all the way in. I got a feeling that Chelsea will do it. I think it was that result they did against Porto was a bit underestimated. Don't forget, it's a Champions League. This is a quarterfinal. Yes, Porto was not the most difficult draw, of course, but they still went there, convincing 2-0 win against them, and now we're half away to the semi-finals. So I would also say that Liverpool will go in there. Having said that, I mean, that defense now is 3 or 4 now out of it. And that is not class. And there was 2 or 3 games they did okay. But if you see these players playing against Real Madrid, you think, wow, this is going to be hard, the last games going into the top 4 finals, so to say.
Right, Spurs hosting Manchester United on Sunday. We've seen Tottenham blow some late leads recently. That prompted this explanation from Jose Mourinho. Same coach, different players. Craig, Jose always wanted to take responsibility, yeah?
Well, at the end of the day, he's now starting to, and it's been evident for a wee while now, that he is starting to get frustrated with some of the players. And this is a very familiar road of the latter years of Jose Mourinho's managerial career. We never, ever, if at all, and maybe the boys can correct me, but in the early, hugely successful days, you never heard this. You know, the guys played for him, they loved him, he protected them at all costs, and they were super successful. This is a 360 over the last few years in terms of it's been a struggle for him. He's seen as a guy who is not cutting it anymore, and he's happy to look elsewhere when results don't go his way. And look, that's okay if you're going into a club and one, you know you're going to be in a job next season, but two, that you know you're going to get rid of most of the guys and you're going to replenish them with new players and lots of money. But this is Tottenham, and that's unlikely to happen. So the guys that he's starting to criticise, if he stays in the job, are probably going to be the guys that he's going to have to work with again next year if Daniel Levy doesn't cut him. So this is a real dangerous game that Mourinho is playing again, but it's a very familiar game of recent years.
Jan, massive match for Tottenham here. How do you suppose the Spurs players will react to effectively getting thrown under the bus?
Well, I think it's a very valid point from Craig. I mean, the first Mourinho we saw, I was a big fan of him, his, and I think every player was who played for him, because you love to be with a manager, you love to respect the manager, they'll always be in front of you. He will always, not taking the blame, but kind of protect any player. And this Mourinho, I'm glad that we have Mourinho in this circus, because he's making his headlines everywhere. But I'm just wondering if Mourinho has a trouble to kind of reach this new generation of players. Yes, same coach, different players, but it's also same coach, but a new generation of players. And I'm just wondering that his leading skills, again, they were used to be fantastic. He has done ever so well, have so much success over the years. But I'm just wondering if this new generation, he can't reach them. And you saw that at the end of the time at Manchester United as well. The ship was going down. The club was more or less dead when Ole Gunnar came in after Mourinho. And at the moment, this what he's doing now at Tottenham as well is just the same road. It's like a film when someone tells you the end of the film. You just know what's going to happen at the end. But what could save them is, of course, to get top four, because then Levy won't get him out, because I mean, there will be a success now if he can get him under top four, and he has to start with a win against his former club, Manchester United.
We had the boys put down their predictions for the weekend's game. What did Craig say? Negative nickel is the headline. Stevie, you got Liverpool drawing against Aston Villa. Why?
That was this morning.
Okay.
The longer the day's gone on, the more I've changed my mind, okay, to be honest.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Well,
no Grealish.
Aston Villa, capable of beating anybody. They're capable of beating Liverpool 7, by the way,
yep,
as we know. They've had a nice rest. All they're doing is game to game. And Liverpool, I really don't know what I'm going to get. So the longer the day goes on, the more it's going the other way.
Speaking of negatives, Craig, I don't think you're looking at Tottenham Manchester United as a very good game. You got it down for a 0-0.
Yeah, I mean, both sides are half decent defensively. Only because I don't think we're going to see the 6-1 again that we saw early in the season. So yeah, I get a feeling that's going to be a tight, coy affair. We know United are a threat with the ball in behind in particular, but we know Tottenham will probably defend deep because that's what they do. So I've gone for a kind of stifling 0-0 game. It's not going to be a disaster for Man United, but as Jan said, if Tottenham have any thoughts about top four, then they probably have to win this game, but I don't see it happening.
Spurs United on Sunday. A little earlier in the day, we got West Ham against Leicester. Jesse Lingard has just been on fire since leaving Manchester United over the winter on loan to West Ham. Craig, what should United do here? Should they sell while the player's stock is high, or should they bring him back?
No, they should sell. I think they should sell him. And I think from the player's point of view, he's 28 now, Jesse Lingard. He's come in for a bit of stick the last few years about off-the-field activities and his lack of interest in the game. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But what we do know, he wasn't able to deliver recently, consistently when given an opportunity for Man United in the last two or three years, that is. And I think for every player, there comes a time where you need to try pastures new. Mm. And I think this is it for Lingard. It's a different atmosphere, different setting, new faces. Yes, he's worked with David Moyes before, but it's all sort of fitting for him, and he feels loved again, and he almost feels like he is the top man there, where he's chest puffed out and they're relying on him and they're looking to him and he's producing the goods. And I think that's great for a player. And as I say, at 28, he's going to have to make that move now. And I really don't... I would see him going back to United as a negative for him, because I think he would go back into a very similar scenario, and I think it would quite quickly evolve into the situation it was before, which is not really much good for Solskjaer and not really much good for Lingard. So I think the players earned his move, showed he can make the move, showed he can perform at a different club, and I think at 28 it's the perfect time to do it.
Jan, does this version of Lingard get into Manchester United's starting 11 next season?
No, I'm not sure he would. And I think that there are two decisive things. First of all, when he comes back to Manchester United, which role will he have in the team? Not only will he be a part-time player, I don't think he will play every game. So which position should he play in? And that was one of the problems when he was at Manchester United. Also, it's a financial thing, because when he comes back in the summer, I understand that West Ham don't have a fixed amount to get him in the summer now anyway. So he has to go back to sort of sort out his deal. And then he just got 1 year left of his contract. So Manchester United will think, should he sit that one out and go for free next summer? I don't think he would. And it's so funny, because the same with Lukaku. I won't compare them, but I can compare them in the terms of they're leaving Manchester United and they do well. That doesn't have to be a criticism of Manchester United. It's just what's happening sometimes, that a player come into another system, another regime, another manager, other teams, teammates, and another atmosphere. That happens. And it's fun to watch Lingard at the moment, because he looks fantastic, and he will get to the Euro squad for England, and he's loving his football. And Lingard is talent. We always knew that. But somehow, something happened at Manchester United, and then it's time to move on. And he seems to have found his luck at West Ham.
Stevie, you agree with Craig? United would be better off selling Lingard than keeping him?
100%, because of the fact the contract only has a year. That makes no sense to keep a player that's not going to play. The truth is, it's pretty straightforward. If you're Ollie, do I play Bruno Fernandes, or do I bring Jesse Lingard and play him there in that same position? Yeah. And what's the answer to that? Not a chance. So 100% for both United and for him, he goes.
All right, then. A massive weekend coming up in the Premier League. Reminder, catch today's edition of Extra Time. We got Stevie, Jan, and Sid joining us and more. Wow, what an episode that must have been, huh? What a picture of Frank. What's your Instagram, Stevie?
No, that was me.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
German press continuing their coverage of the reported rift between Hansi Flick and his bosses at Bayern Munich, specifically the sporting director, Hasan Salihamidzic. Bayern getting Union Berlin on the weekend. Jan Agafjordtoft still with us. Jan, on Thursday you tweeted Bayern were going to have to find themselves a new coach because Hansi Flick was going to take the German national team job. Well, after today's, I would say, very tense press conference for Flick, I bet you're feeling a lot better about that tweet.
I do. And I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure that he will take the job as a German coach. Listen, FC Bayern at its worst is FC Hollywood. And now they are going there again. The treble last year, they win the Bundesliga this year, and they could still end up winning the Champions League this year. But then the leadership of the club just divides. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, legend, Bayern Germany. Uli Hoeneß, the same, been there for many years. And they have had this kind of civil war, but out where they, like men do, when they have a fight with each other, but still, it's all about Bayern. But now they've taken side of one each. So Karl-Heinz Rummenigge is supporting Hansi Flick, and Uli Hoeneß, they say, is out of it. He's not. He's around, and he will support Salihamidžić. And then you have in the middle of this, Oli Kahn, another legend of the game, and he just tried to be in between, because in a half a year, he's going to take over the job for Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. And we think that we're talking about a reality show here. We're talking about one of the best football clubs in Europe, and you saw, or in the world, and you saw the press conference today, and you've seen in all kind of comments that's been done, Hansi Flick, he doesn't like this soap opera. He is more the guy who wants to play, do his football. He wants to pick his best team. Salihamidžić, very eager to show that the players he has brought in, that they should play more, and so on and so on. Hansi Flick will not be the Bayern coach coming the 1st of July 2021.
Jan, you say they're one of the best clubs in the world. They dominate the Bundesliga. Just how much of a setback would it be for Bayern to lose Hansi Flick?
I think it would be I think he's a perfect manager for them, because he can always be in that. If he got an experience from every kind of job in football. He is very likable. He is adjustable. You have to be adjustable when you are a Bayern coach. If you look at the list after Pep Guardiola, they tried with Ancelotti. They didn't work out. Then Sagnol for a small moment. And then, like always, they cry for Jupp Heynckes. He came back for a time. And then they went for a former Bayern player again, Niko Kovac, who won the titles for them. But he kind of didn't go into that Bayern gene, winning, having good trainings, having a good system, putting Thomas Müller out of it. And then they got Hansi Flick, who was the assistant, quietly, the kind of Jupp Heynckes kind of way. And this is a Heynckes way when he turned 60, because then he calmed down. And just doing what Bayern loved to do, play good football and win titles. Because there is another question, Seb, is who will come after him? Mm. And they will probably say, we want Nagelsmann, but Matisic and Red Bull and Leipzig will say, no chance. There is no clause. There is no chance they will get him. That will be their first priority. So I think one of the big worries is that who will be the next coach? And this is the only way that Bayern Munich can lose the title in Germany is if they lose against Bayern Munich and they start with this FC Hollywood thing again and can't find the right coach. Then Bayern, like a lot of other clubs, but especially Bayern, who is so dominant in the league, if they take the wrong coach, they are in deep trouble.
Bayern top of the table. Borussia Dortmund, not so much. In fifth, 7 points, Jan, out of that top four. We tie that top four to Dortmund's ability to keep Erling Haaland. Give me a percentage right now. What percentage chances do you give Dortmund to get back into one of those Champions League spots?
Poor, that is a tough one, because my club in fourth place, Eintracht Frankfurt, but I think it's going to be very hard for them. Having said that, this weekend, Eintracht Frankfurt is playing Wolfsburg at home. Both teams having a great season. But it's a difficult game again for Dortmund away from home against Stuttgart. Stuttgart is doing well this year. So I don't think there is a big chance that they will get in there. And I don't want to go down the Don Hutchinson road with the percentages. I've seen how wrong that can go at ESPN.
Oh, man, math, not our forte here at ESPN FC. Of course, ESPN, though, the home for the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich kicking things off Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time against Union Berlin. Four more games on Saturday, two on Sunday, one on Monday, all available on ESPN+. Top of Liga looks like this. After Lille defeated Metz 2-0 on Friday, they are now 6 points clear of PSG. A PSG side, by the way, still with a game in hand. Julian Arang still with us. PSG on the weekend have Strasbourg, Jules, but of course the focus, you would think, is Bayern Munich looking ahead. How important is winning the league anymore to PSG?
It's always important to win the league, but the most important is to go certainly to the next round of the Champions League, qualifying for the semi-final. That's why the priority is not the game tomorrow at Strasbourg. It's certainly the return leg against Bayern Munich on Tuesday at the Parc des Princes. That's why Pochettino could go with a very hybrid team or even complete B or C team and leaving even Kylian Mbappe and Angel Di Maria on the bench, because all they're thinking about right now is the Champions League. And yet they still have somehow to focus a little bit on the league, because 6 points is a big gap already. And if they want to keep some hopes and chance to win this title and beat Lille to it, then they will have to win at Strasbourg and close the gap again to 3 points, and then waiting for Lille to drop points, hopefully at some point. So you can't take for granted that you're going to win at Strasbourg even with a B team, but you also have to play this game to win it and not just think about the Champions League against Bayern Munich next week.
PSG, of course, take a 3-2 lead into that second leg against Bayern Munich. That's the good news, Jules, but they did have to burn two subs before the first 45 minutes were out. And on the back line in that first leg, what kind of shape is PSG in heading into this second leg, and specifically Marquinhos, because we know what a key player he is for them?
Well, yeah, Marquinhos' fitness is really the big key here. And I think they're waiting anxiously at the club to see how much he recovers, how quickly he recovers from that groin tear that he suffered 5 minutes in that first leg in Munich under the snow. And right now, I would say it's very unlikely that he can play unless he plays under an injection or something like this. But naturally, it looks very unlikely. But he is usually someone who recovers pretty quickly from injuries. He's a very strong physical player. So at the club, they're really hoping that he can make some sort of miraculous recovery and start there. Even if he's just 80%, I think you take it and you bring him in. But you don't want to over-risk it either. But he's such a key player for this PSG team, and mostly because there's no one really to replace him. You'd have to play Danilo Pereira, who's a central midfielder, at the back instead. And that's not ideal. Again, even if Lewandowski is not back, Bayern have their own issue. Lucas Hernandez, we've learned today, is very likely to miss that second leg as well, on top of Zule, Goretzka and Lewandowski. But PSG also, unfortunately, have their own problems.
Jules, speaking of big players, what about Marco Verratti? Obviously missed out on the first leg.
Yes, because he tested positive. There was a big cluster with the Italian national team during the international break. Florenzi, the right back as well, who was also a big miss, also tested positive. Everybody has their fingers crossed, legs crossed, toes crossed, arm crossed, everything crossed at the club, so that the next batch of tests will be negative, and then they can come back and maybe just train Monday, Tuesday maybe, and then be able to play on Tuesday. But again, they can only wait and see what the next test do. But if you count on when he tested positive the first time round, plus the self-isolation periods, there's a little chance that Verratti and Florenzi, but certainly Verratti, could be ready for Tuesday night.
You know what? Let's take another look at those odds to advance, because for anybody listening to this show, you would have thought Bayern Munich won the first leg. Everybody is still saying Bayern Munich, on this show anyway, are the favorites to go through. Jules, are we disrespecting PSG a little bit?
As long as you're not jinxing them, I don't care. I mean, I think Bayern were the better team in that first leg. No doubt they dominated, they created more chances, but the efficiency was on PSG's side in both boxes, and that made the difference. No one can tell me what's going to happen in the second leg. It might be a completely different game, especially with the absentees on both sides. And maybe Bayern would be the best team again, and maybe they might not qualify as well. It's just so nicely poised, I think. But certainly in Paris, they really believe, strong belief, that they will see this one through and qualify for the semi-final. And I want to believe that they can certainly pull this one out of the bag, even if Bayern showed how good they are in that first half.
Plenty more on PSG Bayern on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. The boys joined by Derek Ray for a full preview.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And a reminder, the Siri Awesome podcast, available for you weekly over on the website. Mina, Nikki, and Matteo breaking down all things Italian football. Speaking of, the Italian top flight looks like this heading into the weekend. Inter, well and truly in charge of their own destiny, 11 points clear. So the real discussion in Italy, of course, is who's going to take those top four spots. Now, AC Milan currently in second, Juventus third, Atalanta fourth, and Napoli 2 points out of the top four and fifth. Here's what the Serie A Awesome podcast crew is predicting, and I really have to point out our boy Matteo Bonetti.
Oh, come on.
I mean, so if you don't know, Matteo's a big AC Milan fan, and he's got him they're second right now. He's got him falling out entirely of the top four. What do you think, like reverse jinx?
Complete double
pessimism
bluff.
There as a fan?
Complete double bluff.
Wait a sec. Pessimism. You're always pessimistic about Liverpool. Surely you can know what Matteo's going through here.
No, not at all.
No?
It's a complete and utter double bluff.
Here's the Serie A schedule for the weekend. All the matches on ESPN Plus, with the obvious exception of Sunday afternoon's Fiorentina-Atalanta match. That one making history over on ABC, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. All right, well, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Stevie, one more thing to take care of.
What?
Extra time. We get into who would play you in a movie about your life.
Oh, nice.
With Sid and Jan. Enjoy.
Not me.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome into a Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I always do it. Why are you surprised? Steve Nichol and Sebi here in studio. We got Sid Lowe and Jan Agafjortov with us as well, plus a great rack of questions. Sid, first one's for you. El Clasico coming up this weekend. What will Zidane do with the starting lineup and for the second leg against Liverpool? Will he keep the same team for all three games, or will there be a rotation?
Well, I think part of the answer here was given by Vinicius after the game against Liverpool in midweek. He was asked by the Touchline reporter immediately as he came off the pitch. He said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how tired are you? And he said, 10. And so I think that tells you that Zidane will want to change players. He'll want to make sure that it's not the same team after every single game. And Zidane does nearly always surprise us. Even if it's only with one player, there is some sort of surprise in there. So I would expect some rotation through the games. I would expect a different team against Barcelona to the one that played against Real Madrid in midweek. And one player I do expect to see that he, of course, only saw as a sub in midweek would be Fede Valverde.
Real Madrid, tired out. Maybe like a week later, Stevie Don could be right.
Well, Don's going to be right eventually, let's be honest.
Not with percentages.
No, well, not with percentages, but just in general. Eventually, he's going to get something right.
Right, right. That tends to happen on this show from time to time. Jan, you mentioned that if Robert Lewandowski was available for Bayern in the game against PSG, they would have scored at least 5 goals. Don't you think the availability of Marco Verratti would have had the same impact on PSG's performance in that game?
No. Why? It wouldn't, because the game, if people saw the game, this was an unbelievable game. I mean, I so much respect of the efficiency of PSG, Mbappé on fire and so on, but the chances and the pressure of Bayern, I'm 100%, maybe we would have scored 6 in that game, because there were games to be brought down from a tree in there. It was Muting scored. Choupo-Moting scored. That is just, you just add five to that to Lewandowski, whatever Moutinho doing. He's doing his best he can. He had a good game in Leipzig as well. He do whatever he can. No, Verratti, great player, but he's Lewandowski much, much more influential and decisive for Bayern Munich.
Stevie, it really was a good game, like a fun game to watch as a neutral. Maybe the best we've seen in a while. Yeah, like the big games have been such a letdown recently.
Yeah, but for a neutral, yes.
Yeah.
But for a coach or somebody who's into the tactics,
you're thinking,
hold on a second, how is this possible?
Right.
All these chances, all these shots, all these saves, all these misses. It depends. What your particular taste is.
Sid, is there any worries at Atletico Madrid that Joao Felix could really look to leave this summer and that Luis Suarez would move on at the same time?
Yep, there's worries about both of those things. I think in the case of Luis Suarez, it's slightly different, of course, because there's an awareness of his age, there's an awareness of the conditions of his knees, and I think they would feel that if he was to move on, particularly, of course, if in the meantime they've managed to win the league and he's contributed, which he's doing with huge numbers of goals, then I think they would think that this was well worth it. It was a free transfer, he came, he gave fantastic service 1 year, and everybody's reasonably happy about that. I think with João Félix, of course, it has a whole new dimension, and that's the dimension of this was the guy that they hoped could be among the best 5, 6, 7 players in the world, that was young, that was going to grow up at the club, that was going to become a superstar with them, and for whom, by the way, they spent 126 million euros for a kid. It's an enormous amount of money for any club, and for a club like Atletico Madrid even more so. And I think there's a real concern that they have only seen the best of him in moments, that they haven't seen the continuity. There's a concern about the possibility of his relationship with Simeone not being quite right, if not necessarily on a personal level, then on a playing level, on a stylistic level. Is this the right kind of player for this kind of manager? And so I think there is a very significant concern, yeah, that João Félix would depart, but not just that, but that what that departure would mean if he did so.
Sid, if you spend 126 million euro on a player and maybe Simeone don't like his way of playing, tell me about the recruiting policy at Atletico Madrid.
Mm. Well, look, this is like a lot of Spanish clubs, and you know, this is something that from a British point of view, obviously for years has been seen as slightly odd, because in Britain we had the culture, if you like, of the manager choosing who to sign. Spanish clubs are run in terms of recruitment normally by either a recruitment department or a sporting director or a technical secretary, and not normally by the manager. Now, it then depends on the relationship between those members of staff and the manager. But also in the case of Atletico Madrid, it's about the sense of... if you like, kind of ambition, the sense of excitement about a young player, the sense that you speak to a manager about it, he says, well, we'll try and make this work. We will try and see if this fits. But everybody knew that on the face of it, at least, this was slightly out of keeping with the kind of players they had before. But Atletico Madrid have been trying to evolve into this for a while. And so I think it wasn't necessarily as kind of as much of a disconnect as it now appears, but at the same time, watching it now, that's the thing, as you rightly say, talk about the recruitment, you could kind of see it maybe coming, but I think there is a risk that ends up blaming it too much on Simeone, because I think obviously, as Simeone has tried to make clear, and I think as others have as well, João Félix has to do his part too in all of this.
But don't you think though, Sid, at the end of the day, your sporting directors now are trying to become just as influential as the manager. So is the sporting director going to go upstairs and say, listen, I've brought in this guy in particular, let's use João Félix as an example, I've brought this guy in, but yet the manager here doesn't know how to use his ability. Is he not going to try and point the finger at Simeone? And if he does, I mean, what's the chances of Simeone going if they, which I think they will, blow this league title?
Well, I mean, that's... look. And that, as you say, you can use João Félix just an example of a mechanical scenario that happens at lots of clubs, and that's about the relationship between that sporting director and the manager. It's also about the chain of command, by the way. And of course, in theory at least, the sporting director is the manager's boss. So in theory at least, he then decides what happens to the manager in the event that he feels that the manager is not getting the best out of the players that he has brought in. He may also feel that, by the way, that he's made the mistake, that the manager has tried, and okay, the best thing to do is to resolve this. But at a club like Atletico Madrid, with the strength and security significance and, if you like, the symbolism of Simeone, then it becomes a very, very much more difficult decision. If you sack Simeone, or if you try and encourage a change there, maybe you come to some sort of mutual agreement, the impact of that, the if you like, the fallout from it, is far greater, I think, in the at the moment in Spain, than any other manager departing any other club. And going back 20, 30 years, I really struggle to think of a manager, since Cruyff at least, who's been such a big figure at a club only is now.
But it's quite interesting, boys, because we've talked about Bayern Munich and the fight there between Salihamidzic and Flick, and it's a part of that. But it's a fair point, said that Simeone got a much more power and a position in their club. But he had some similarities, because now Boateng, I mean, he's done his games. He won all the titles, and people thought that he would get one more year contract to kind of reward him for that. But this time, no, get him out, and that is advantage Salihamidzic and his big supporter Uli Hoeneß.
It's good points it makes, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a whole series of other points of pressure and conflict as well at any club. There's lots of interest going on. And bear in mind, I think it's probably worth noting something here. João Félix is represented by a certain Portuguese agent whose relationship with Atletico Madrid at the very, very highest level is extremely close. And so then that doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that more of his players come in. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that the players that do come in will succeed or will even be given opportunities to succeed. But what it does mean, of course, is it provides an extra point at which there can be fault lines, an extra point at which there can be pressure applied in terms of what the solution is to something that's not a crisis by any means. Because I think João Félix can still be a great player at Atletico Madrid. But certainly there is a point of a kind of, what would you call it, disconnect there, at the very least.
Yeah, good point.
Just enjoying the latest edition of Atletico Madrid TV here. Stevie, if you were Tuchel, would you scrap the Werner experiment, clearly out of form and has better options in Pulisic, Ziyech, etc.?
Well, I think eventually you have to make a change. Sometimes for the player's sake as well. Sometimes when you keep throwing them out there and it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse, you're not doing them any favours. And I think also when you have options, you have to use them as well, because your options are sitting watching it and they're sitting watching a guy who, listen, as a football player, if you're not playing, the only way you accept not playing is if the guy in your position is producing.
Right.
And the minute he stops producing, then you've got a problem. So Tuchel has to be very careful that the boys on the side who are not getting an opportunity, when there's a guy struggling clearly, that becomes a problem just in and around the club, as opposed to what's happening on the field.
Jan, Tuchel has given Werner quite a leash here, should he?
It's quite interesting player, Timo Werner, because he's normally a goal-getter who always score their goals. But this player, he's a player that he can score two, and then he can have a long, long period that he had in many seasons not scoring goals, and he's a guy that seems to lose his confidence. So he's a funny kind of goal-getter. I'm not sure that we can call him a goal-getter. We can call him maybe a striker who scores goals. And I think there's also, as well, his personality. He is one of these guys coming to London, coming to a new place. You have the pandemic, you have to adjust and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, it's always what you produce on the pitch. With Pulisic, Ziyech, and all the other alternatives they have on the bench, is going to be tough for him. And Tuchel can maybe give him some German friendship kind of thing for a while. And he's a very expensive player and so on and so on. But at the end of the day, you have to get your goals. And you saw what it was with Germany as well now, that chance he missed against North Macedonia. I mean, that is a fantastic, terrible chance to miss.
I think we called that teacher's pet.
Oh, yeah?
When I was a kid, yeah.
Jan, plenty of options for this question. Most exciting youngster in the Bundesliga. Who you got?
Ooh, that is a... Well, you have the usual suspect. But I think that I don't want to go for Haaland. I don't want to go for Sancho this time, or Musiala at Bayern. I will go for this week's, I think, the best youngsters. That was Bellingham's performance against Manchester City. He was absolutely brilliant. And I can see back on the game against Lazio, the first game they had in the Champions League. And when Sebastian Kehl, the head of sports, said to me, and I said, why are you playing these young kids? This is the first Champions League game. And I said, because we promised him that. We will never get youngsters if we just promise them and not play them. And he had a bad game against Lazio, but he was excellent this week against Manchester City.
Jan, interesting you should choose Bellingham, because your Twitter, it sounds like you thought his goal should have been disallowed against Manchester City.
What happened to the referee there? Why did he just leave it for 2 seconds? Okay, check it with VAR. And then but this time, should we use VAR? No, not at all. We blow the whistle as soon as we can. Terrible decision.
Sid, what did you make of it?
Exactly what Jan says. I think it's a bad decision in terms of whether or not it was a foul. I think he was wrong about that. But I can understand that that's something that people can debate about, although I would disagree with anyone who says I'm wrong. But I think the big thing, as Jan says, is the kind of, if you like, the mechanical foolishness. The mechanical foolishness of not giving yourself the chance to get it wrong and be corrected. To not give it that enough of a split second to have a way back. Now, I personally am not particularly a big fan of the VAR, and that's saying it, shall we say, in a soft way. But if you've got the VAR, then it's a tool to be used. And then to do that just struck me as I say, in terms of the decision-making process, the mechanics, the protocol, call it what you want, not whether or not the decision was right or wrong, although, as I say, I think it was wrong, but not giving yourself the chance to find a way out if you got it wrong.
Sid, you didn't even just think it was wrong. You said it was the worst decision of the season.
I think I didn't call it the worst decision of the season. I think my phrase was an appallingly bad decision.
Okay.
And I'm absolutely sticking with that. Not, as I say, again, not because of whether or not it was a foul, but as far as I'm concerned, that's not a foul. And if we're going to start giving these, then you know, it's over. Just not giving yourself the chance to have another look.
Stevie, who was the toughest player you were ever forced to defend against in a match? Jan, who was the toughest defender you ever went up against? Stevie, start with you.
The guy who gave me the biggest problem that I couldn't figure out, and he's the only one ever, by the way, that I can remember that I couldn't figure
You've
out.
You told me this and I forgot it. It was Speedy.
His name is Rafael Gordillo.
Oh, okay.
I played against him a couple of times. I played against him for Scotland, against Spain, at Hampden Park, and then I played against him in a friendly at Real Madrid. I just couldn't work the guy out. I mean, he's not... He runs awkwardly, he's got an awkward carriage. He's just... His sense of balance is... You know, he's one of those guys, you think he's about to fall over, but he's actually revving his cell up to run past you. I mean, just... I couldn't work the guy out.
Right.
Yeah, fantastic, what a player. Sid will tell you about him.
Yeah, you knew he had your number.
Yeah.
Did he know it? Like, could you tell he knew it?
Well, I don't speak Spanish, so I couldn't really communicate well, you know.
Some of your pronunciations around here. Oh, pretty good. Sid, you were smiling while Stevie was telling that story.
Yeah, I was actually just listening to Stephen, thinking how much the Spanish would love to hear that, because he's a very, very popular figure, played for Real Betis, played for Real Madrid as well. As Steve says, a little bit unorthodox, maybe not the most graceful of footballers, but there was something about him that I think made people feel an enormous amount of affection for him, and a very, very good footballer from an era in which the Spanish national team always had good players, but of course didn't have the success that would come sort of 10, 15, 20 years later.
Jan, toughest defender you face?
Well, I think that will be Desailly, the French defender playing for Chelsea. I mean, positioning, good with the ball. And I remember I tried to turn him, tried to look for his shirt, tried to get into his chest, and it was like a brick wall. He was like unbelievable. When I meet him now, sometimes pitch side, I'm nearly afraid of him then. But then I go over to him, make my selfie, and say to him, "You were the toughest defender I've ever met," and he probably don't know who I am. So that is the story of that one. But he was enormous. He was a fantastic defender, the French Desailly.
Jan, you might have just come at the wrong time. You might have just missed these two. But did you ever play against Shotton and Briggs from Oxford?
No.
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 Well, that's a tough guy.
I'll tell you what, a couple of robbers' dog heads that would smash anything and anybody who got in their way. two centre backs.
But I think it's quite interesting when you're talking about the hardest defenders you played, because you end up want to choose the guys, the defenders who were good footballers as well, because you played against someone who was mad, but still Desailly you could respect as a great defender as well. So I think that's why I picked him.
All right, gentlemen, last question.
I don't know, when you start talking about mad defenders, I can't help but sort of think of Terry Hurlock. I don't know if either of you two ever played against Terry Hurlock.
That was a midfield, yeah. Not
old
job.
Old school, hard, crazy defender, yeah.
Not job.
Last question here from Frank LaBeouf. Stevie. Well, LaBeouf spelled B-U-F-F.
All right.
So this is Frank LaBeouf. Hang on, this is Frank LaBeouf asking
Jan. I was trying to look straight where I'm supposed to here. I didn't want to look at the question.
He was in the same French team.
It's all very confusing.
Yeah, should we take off a shirt?
No, please. Please, none of us look like Frank, I don't think. Stevie, we all know that Don's reading could use an update. Will you consider making your book into a movie so we can make Don happy and he doesn't have to read it?
Do you know, that's a great idea.
I think it would be, honestly, it's an easy read. I'm sure it'd be a great... great movie as well.
Great.
Who would play you, Stevie?
There's a question here. Who plays Stevie? Yeah. If there's a movie of Stevie, who plays Stevie? I mean, obviously it's Steve McQueen, isn't it? I mean...
Well, I think we'd get Frank a wig and let Frank do it.
Totally.
Because he would know what to do.
He'd nail the accent for sure.
He would be able to do all the stuff on the field.
Right.
The guy from The Billionaire, what's his name? The guy from The Billionaire, he's a Liverpool fan as well. What's his name? The guy from The Billionaire? Help us! Come on, I need anybody.
Producer's frantically scrambling to Google random actor that you've called up. No, it's got to be a footballer, Stevie. It's got to be a footballer.
Good-looking man, Stevie. Good-looking man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Sean Connery's not with us anymore.
Damian Lewis. Is that who you're thinking of?
Damian Lewis. Damian Lewis.
Of course. Wow, look at the analysis that you get here on ESPN FC's Extra Time. All right, that's it for us. Enjoy the show over the weekend. Dan is back on Saturday. Plenty to look forward to, including El Clásico.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.